This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your mega preview pod for this week's U.S. Open. It's storylines, it's best bets, it's one and done. Joining me to break it all down, Patrick McDonald is here. Hello, Patrick.
What's going on, gang? Rick, great to see you in the media center. Myself, I'm running on adrenaline and saliva at this moment, and it's only Tuesday, so I can't wait to get into it.
My goodness, adrenaline and saliva, good combination. Mark Immelman is here. Hello, Mark. Looking very epic today.
Look at you. Epic. Rick, so glad you're in the media center and I'm not. From tomorrow, I'm going to be running on margaritas and the selection thereof, so I'll catch up with you guys after.
But good wow, to be very you. Good. All right. Yeah, I love to hear that. Yeah. There you go. Well deserved, of course. Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, hello, sir.
Hello, boys. I'm not running on anything as exciting as you two, just all the normal stuff, but I'm fired up about this week. I've had such a hard time or such a challenging time kind of try to get into this golf course and read the quotes and compile it and put it together to what we think is going to work. So I'm really excited to get your thoughts on the golf course with boots on the ground, Rick.
Greg, you're in the Northeast. You could be running on Duncan, my friends. That's what you could be.
Yeah, I guess I could. Trust me, there's plenty of coffee in my life. Not always Dunkin'. Make it in the coffee pot downstairs. I guess I could get Dunkin' for that, but I don't.
This is not sponsored, but I do make Dunkin' Donuts coffee at home. I buy the grounds.
Wow.
And then put it in the coffee machine.
You guys pot boys? You guys brew pots?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? It takes me a while to drink it, so I do like I don't do a full pot and do the same pot all day. I'll brew like whatever, 20 ounces and then another 20 and then another 20.
Okay, I've got a Chemex, I've got a French press, I've got the pot, I've got the drip thing, I've got an espresso, I've got a Keurig. Come on over, I've got whatever you need.
Damn, I'm an espresso boy myself.
Espresso is good, reliable. Yeah.
Greg or Mark is Mr. Coffee. We learned that already on this U.S. Open week. All right, gents, let's jump into this. Los Angeles Country Club, the North Course. It is right here. I'm here. The 10th hole's right behind me. Patrick, it is a little bit interesting. I think you were alluding to how often like a new course gets into a major championship run here, right? Like what was the last time we had a new course make its debut?
I believe it was the 2020 PGA. Colin Morikawa, TPC Harding Park. And then before that, technically Quail Hollow. That was its first major for Justin Thomas. And then you bring in Kiawah Island for Rory, I believe. Torrey Pines was the first one when Tiger won in 08. Right. But yeah, this is one of those that hasn't really been in the spotlight at all.
Aaron Hilton, Chambers Bay.
Yeah, those two.
And Kiawah was used for a Ryder Cup before that, or is that not a major championship? Is that a major but not a major championship?
I don't know anything that happened before 2000, so I can't tell you.
Okay. Had a Ryder Cup there. The war on the shore.
Yeah, whatever. What counts and what doesn't count. And Greg, when you've been doing your research, I mean, what have you found? I can kind of give you some insights that I've seen out here, but it's a par 70. It's going to play like 7,500 yards. There's a lot of undulation and there's a lot of blind shots and you've got to be playing from the right spots around this place.
Yeah. Undulation is a big factor. I believe it seems like, which it turns into the big factor with where you hit your tee ball. It seems like, you know, not necessarily holes that are straight uphill or downhill, but really sloping fairways where if you hit it in the right side, you end up in the right rough and you end up with a blind shot. If you hit it in the left side, you have a different angle. And that concept is allowed for by the width of these fairways, which are, you know, sometimes 70 yards wide. They're really big fairways, which is unique for a U.S. Open. But it's still, it asks for precision off the tee. But I think it also allows players some options, allows players to scramble a little bit more. And perhaps it'll make it a little less penal, at least off the tee, than we're used to seeing in a U.S. Open. So a little bit of a different U.S. Open test that we're used to seeing. The other thing I've heard a lot of reports on, Rick, is the roughs. You have multiple different types of rough out there. You have Bermuda primarily, and then around the bunkers, you have a Kikuyu fescue, thick, very different than the Bermuda. And I have a feeling, and I know I'm not the only one here, but it seems like that's going to play a significant role in this championship.
Yeah, that's a good segue to you, Mark, because we were kind of talking about this before we went hot a little bit. We can talk about the fairway rough, but that rough kind of around the bunkers and with most greens being protected by these bunkers, it's very much greenside as well. This is a type of rough that they actually did a bunch of testing on. They built like a test bunker and they laid out like a bunch of different, you know, sod and like to see what they could get to come out of it. And this is what they settled on. I don't know what the official name of it is, but it's very much in play. It is very unpredictable. And guys are, you know, Monday, Tuesday, they're hitting a lot of practice shots to try to get the feel.
Well, yeah, look, I've not been there, not even when I've been out there for Riviera and some of the events out in LA. But what I did do sort of in preparation for this was I reached out to Jeff Shackelford, who's a respected author, is a wonderful architectural guy. And he worked as part of Gil Hans's crew when they came in here and kind of updated, refurbished, whatever you wanted to say to this golf course. And so he texted me. So I said to him, hey, give me just a quick take on this golf course, and then I'll speak about that rough. He said, George Thomas designed, remember George Thomas designed Riviera just down the road as well. He goes, it's surprisingly hilly. We'll call for multiple shot shapes, ask players to adjust to very few flat stances. And despite being a US Open, we'll ask for driver on a lot of holes. Several holes appear wide, but will narrow significantly with the fairways running. Players need to be ready to deal with a vast array of yardages, especially on the five par threes. And then he said that sixth you mentioned is sort of will offer a bit of a dilemma, just like the 10th down the road at Riviera. And then he said, with the field coming in here with very little, you know, advance notice and no data to work with, he said he felt like the practice rounds at this place were going to be as important as any, if not more so, given that these guys just aren't prepared for what the examination involves. And so to that, from what I've heard so far, I haven't seen anything, that the players are just, the rough around the greens is punitive. Now, there's a lot of wonderful sort of runoffs and chipping areas, which is very similar to Riviera. But with this mixture of whatever it is around the greens, I said so before the top of the show that what I saw around these bunkers with that fescue and almost eyelash looking stuff, that it stops the ball from rolling down into the greenside sand. So if you don't have the ball in a bunker, or if you don't have the ball in a chipping area, you're essentially guessing, because that grass is thick. It's like a St. Augustine sort of looking blade too. And it is punitive. And so I have a real sense that that rough greenside around one of these bunkers is probably going to have a say so in who wins the championship late Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Josh, you can run some of these photos that we have here. Greg, I looked like you wanted to jump in there, but what I will say is there's been a lot of intel sharing in these practice rounds, right? These guys are almost working as a team around this place. Okay, now you hit one from that angle up this hill. Let's see what it does. Like they are trying to download as much information as possible as quickly as possible.
I guess, Rick, the question I wanted to ask you is, how much around the greens is this rough really in play? Is it just around the edges of the bunkers? Are there areas of Bermuda grass around the bunkers? Like when these players miss greens, what are they primarily going to be faced with? Or is it just a variety for everybody?
So that thick, wispy stuff that you see that that Mark was talking about is around the bunkers. This stuff here, this is kind of around fairways and around greens, where this is very, it's kind of hard to tell in these pictures if you're watching on YouTube, but it's very random. It's very rough. It's very patchy. There are lies where it kind of sits up, sits halfway up, some that drop all the way down there. So you're not necessarily getting that super thick, nasty stuff that you see around the bunkers everywhere, but there is some type of randomness, some type of penalty for being out of the short grass.
It's very interesting to me. I guess if I had to put a description on what that's going to take, what it takes for somebody around the greens here to perform. And this leads me to another question that I've been pondering all week, but it leads to somebody who is very adaptable in their short game. You know, they have an ability to kind of see shots and feel shots and handle situations they've never seen before, and come up with something that's a little more creative, a word that's been thrown around a lot. And that leads me to the next question, Rick, which is, you know, how hard are these greens going to be to hit? We've seen U.S. Opens play varying degrees. Like Pebble Beach, the greens are small, but you could hit them. A good shot stayed on the green, and good shots were rewarded with the green of regulation. Torrey Pines, you kind of saw a mix of both. And at Shinnecock, you saw great shots that didn't stay on the green. So are these greens receptive to a well-struck shot, or are you going to see carnage into the greens?
No, I don't think so. You know, good shots are being rewarded. You know, if you compare it to Brookline, I mean, these greens are massive compared to Brookline, right? Although you'll notice that some of them are, like, the 8 green is very small, but, like, the 3rd green is huge, right? Like, there's just a lot of different shapes and sizes of these greens, but they're not repelling good shots, which I think is important. Now, whether or not you've got to try to come out of the fairway or out of the fairway rough, or out of the short grass is a different story, but the greens are fair.
Here's what I want to ask you, Rick, because look, the West Coast, as you well know, you've lived out there for so long, it's very low humidity. And if you have low humidity, sunshine, and some wind, that's a recipe for a golf course getting crispy quickly. So you say, yeah, the greens are receptive and playable right now. So how far do the USGA let these puppies go? Because I'm expecting with some of the undulations, they could get hair-raising if they don't sprinkle these places once in a while.
There is a rumor floating around the driving range, Mark, that the USGA might water them in between the morning and the afternoon waves.
They would have to, I would think. I mean, with low humidity, and when you're shaving these puppies down, like they're going to for the US Open to get the speeds up, it'll be grim, you know, towards the end of Thursday, let alone Sunday afternoon.
What are we going to do next? To have a shotgun start? You're going to water in between the waves? Are you kidding me? This is the National Open, you guys, the U.S. Open. Everyone gets a morning tea time. Everyone gets an afternoon tea time. Let the boys, you know, freak out for 72 holes.
Well, that's kind of been what I heard down the range is like, really, are we really going to water this in between? But to Mark's point, like there is some level of keeping the course
okay
without losing it. Yeah, without losing it before things get a little bit hairy here.
And helping the field keep their collective heads before Thursday rolls around, because otherwise you'd have a bunch of basket cases before Thursday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the big features, Patrick, that we're going to see, especially on the front nine, the Barranca. I don't know if I'm. I think it's Barranca.
Barranca.
But I say that's correct. Barranca. Barranca. Yeah, so Barranca, which is a fancy term for dried up riverbed. It's really nothing fancy, but it is a pretty significant element and feature on probably holes. I think it's like 2 through 8, essentially down on the canyon side of the front nine. And you'll see these guys. They're walking through this thing, Patrick, and it's like, there's nothing good in there for you. Like, you do not want to be in this stuff. You're going to have to, it's potential to come into play, like the creeks did at Oak Hill, or the water does at Southern Hills. Like, it's available on the front nine.
It's kind of like the old caramel or caramel debate,
right?
Which way you say it.
I say caramel.
Caramel.
There, There you go. Tomato, tomato, Barranca, Barranca. So, yeah, does it come into play on six at all?
So six is the drivable par four. No, no, because okay. It's over that tree. No, you'd have to be fairly out of position for it to come into play on six, I think.
Okay. I believe I heard Colin Morikawa talking about it and saying it's like iffy, but you could draw some decent lies in the Barranca, like if you're very lucky. And it sounds like that's kind of the whole encompassing thing about this course so far. With the rough, you could draw some nice lies. In the Barranca, you could draw some nice lies, or you could be completely boned. So really the key for these guys, just don't mess with that stuff. Hit the ball on the fairway. Easier said than done. I know Greg said wider landing areas than we're used to for the US Open, but with the slopes and undulation, it will make kind of these wide fairways feel pretty small. So it's all very compelling to me, and the Barranca is just another added layer to that.
You could draw a clean lie. I think you'd have to be very, very lucky for that to happen, just kind of looking out. And because the lie is one thing, stance would be an issue even if you had a clean lie. So there's a lot of issues like that, Greg. The other thing to consider here, and I love, just because, I mean, it feels like we've been on this run of major championships, I kind of do like looking back at Oak Hill for the PGA Championship, which felt like it was a lot of par and bogey golf. I actually think these guys are going to make a lot more birdies here, at least relative to Oak Hill. But there are doubles lurking big time, and a lot of them come out of the Barranca.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like that. And especially with the setup potential, the setup capabilities, and the options that you have if you're the USGA. So it seems like you can set up holes to be very scoreable, very birdieable, and you can set up holes to be seemingly impossible. So I think the setup will be a big factor there. But with the variety that you get in the lies, with the situation you have around the bunkers and the Barranca, you know, a rugged golf course leaves you in this position where when you're out of position, it can go one of two ways, and you can make a birdie, or you can lose your ball. And that leads to a big variety in the scores that we see. Then you have short par fours, you have short par threes, you have long par fours, long par threes. The par fives are, other than one, not necessarily all that reachable. And there seems to be a lot of danger lurking around them. So yeah, I think you're really going to have to keep the ball in, you know, in between the playable areas in order to ensure yourself you're going to have a chance. And even then, coming into these greens, there's doubles lurking, which is a very uneasy aspect, even though it may look a little wider than normal.
Hey, Greg, that was thoroughly professional analysis there. And I want you to say bunkers and Barranca five times fast, because it'll come out as bankers and Barranca here very soon.
Bunkers, Barranca, bunkers, Barranca, bunkers, Barranca.
He's not bad.
Well, that's actually how I warm up for every podcast.
For sure, right, yeah.
Red leather, yellow leather. The two holes that I think, there's a lot of good holes out here, Patrick, but the two holes that I think, if you're coming out and you want to find a spot, but I also think will play an interesting role. Six is that drivable par four where you cannot see the green from the tee box. And it gives you a lot of options. None of them are particularly good. I watched Rory McIlroy play that hole this morning. Yep, there it is. So Rory tried a couple of things. Layup down the left-hand side, then you have to hit to a skinny green. It ain't all that fun. It's not all that good. It's an awkward number. It's like 77 yards. Or you just hit three wood, which is what Rory hit, to the right of that tree, and basically pump it down there and just take it in the rough on the right-hand side. That's one of the holes. The other one is 15, which is a par three that seemingly it can and seemingly will at some point play like 79 yards.
I think number six, it was a lot of questions regarding that from players coming into the week, but I think you could correct me if I'm wrong. I think a lot of them are going to pull the three wood and hit it up there. Colin Morikawa said that his plan the entire day or all week, all four rounds, was to lay up to the left. And then JJ came in and explained it to him. And now he's going to, unless something happens and it's a really tucked pin or whatever it may be, he's pumping a three wood down there all 4 days. He said, if I'm even par on that hole, I'm going to take it and run. Kind of like number 10 at Genesis. He says, pretty much, if I don't make the big mistake on that hole with a double bogey or something, and I'm even par, he's like, someone's going to play it in 3 under. That's just what's going to happen. Someone's going to figure it out, somehow play it in 3 under. But if I'm even par and I get 4 pars each round, I'm a happy camper. I'm going to take that and run. Denny McCarthy was pumping 3 wood out there as well. They did a really nice thing on Golf Channel with him. And I think even Rory McIlroy, like you said, was someone who was hitting 3 wood to the right. Koepka didn't really give a tell on what he was going to do, but he did say in his presser, he stood on the green, looked back, and he was like, it's a very simple, like, game plan to that hole, looking on that green and looking back to the tee. So I assume he's pumping a 3 wood down the right side as well, and kind of simplify the hole from there.
He's just basically said to you, because look, I just mentioned that Shackelford said there's no metrics on the golf course, but the metrics in professional golf, and, you know, thanks to Mark Brody, say the closer you get the ball to the target, the easier the shot becomes. And we see the same thing down the way at Riviera with the 10th. A handful of guys, if that, in that size field, actually lay the thing up. The rest of them just try and bash it down the left-hand side, hope for some sort of break there in between those trees and pitch it on the green, hopefully close, because a wedge to that target at 10 is downright impossible. And from what I understand from you guys, Rick especially, it's very difficult to this place too. So I would figure that all and sundry would just whip it down the right, and then sort of play up the throat of the green, if you will, and then hopefully make a couple birdies.
If you're going to lay up, Greg, you should just hit wedge. Laying up to 77 yards like Rory did this morning is not the play. You can't hit it high enough with enough spin to get it to stop. It's uphill. It's a very awkward number. It brings a lot more trouble into play. You might as well just lay up to 150 and hit a full shot in to the narrow part of the green. If you hit 3 wood, it's actually a little bit to the right of the tree off the tee box. If you do that, you just have to get it over that tree. You'll be in the rough, or you'll be somewhere around it, but that's a better outcome.
Yeah, it seems like that is the play. And Mark highlighted it beautifully. We've learned that in professional golf, unless there's a penalty area where you can lose a ball, the best option, and actually in most cases, even if there is a penalty area, you send it. And what? So driver's out of play because it's too much club. Is that the?
Well, I mean, for Rory, it is. There's definitely guys who will hit drive.
Right. But you hit it up there and you figure it out from there. I mean, it's like, you know, the saying around the greens, well, a bad putt is better than a good chip. Well, it's the same deal. If you hit a pitch shot that's poor, that's going to be better than a shot from 77 yards or from 150. It's just going to pan out over time. So the caddies know that, the players know that. And my guess is, especially when it's penal around the green, right? That, you know, it's problematic if you miss on that third shot or your second shot, rather. It becomes a problem for your third. So get it up there close. Take that shot out of play. And I think you're going to see a large majority of the field do that. If they don't do it Thursday, I think they'll figure it out by the weekend.
Hey, Rick, just along those lines too, I don't often look at the comments, but I just saw this too. And it sort of goes with what we were saying with just the trends on the PGA Tour. When you have a full-size field like this, is 156, I believe it is. There was a question here, is there advantage for Thursday for the first round leader likely to come out of the morning? I would bet almost everything I had on that fact, because in the morning, the greens are a little smoother, less traffic. It's always a little bit more moist. You know, there in California, you get some of that marine layer in there. It sometimes holds some of the moisture in the green. So, you know, if I was a gambling guy, I would certainly lay some money on some dude that was in the morning Thursday to be the first round leader.
Yeah, Rory was out alone first off the tee this morning. It was pretty receptive. And then obviously as the day goes on, that marine layer burns off and everything dries out pretty quickly. Brooks Koepka, our most recent major champion, Patrick, is going for number 6 this week. He thinks he can get to double digits. How do you assess Big Brooks's chances of getting it done this week?
It's hard to question anything he's saying. I mean, you look at the Masters, he said it would never happen again. He puts himself in position, and guess what? 1 month later, it didn't happen again. So for him, I loved everything that he said, and people are talking about his health being back, his confidence being back. When Brooks is on his game, he kind of has that chip and a little smirk when he talks. He has that smirk like he's going to walk past you to class and stuff you in a locker on his way to the back nine to contention on Sunday at a major championship. And that's what it looked like at the media center today. This has been a great championship for him. He doesn't have to go super low. He just can par you to death over and over again. And I really liked what he said. He said he kind of thrives in the chaos, kind of going full-on Bane Batman mode, saying, you know, I was born into the darkness, you merely adopted it type of deal. and someone asked him, like, when did you know you loved the chaos? And he was like, Shinnecock Hills. Everyone was moaning about the golf course, and he's like, they all forgot we're playing for the U.S. Open here. Uphill putts are pretty easy still. So he's cocky, he's confident, he has his game. I will say, as I said on the Sunday show, I think the one hole you could poke into it is he didn't play leading into it. And he's been a guy who loves to play into major championships. We haven't seen him since the DC event on the LIV Golf Tour. In all five of his wins, he has played the week prior. And outside of those, the 14 that he hasn't, he's finished outside the top 37 of those times. So if there's one hole, something to look at, maybe a little rust, but by all accounts, he's firing on all cylinders.
But here's the irony of Brooks. Okay, and look, yeah, to that press conference, he clearly got his swagger back. And if I'd seen the press conference before I had submitted my one and done pick, I would have went with Brooks Koepka, just the way he looked. So I'm so on board with you there, Patrick. But remember the PGA Championship? I think he basically cobbled together a scrappy 74 on day one. He had basically not very much going on whatsoever. And the irony about him is the longer major championships go on, the more he finds his way to the top of the leaderboard, where he's playing on a league where they only play 54 holes. So if he gets off to a slow start, he doesn't have the benefit of time. But that guy that I watched, the way he was talking, the way he played at the PGA Championship, the way this golf course looks like it's shaping up, and it might, and look, we don't know, it might become a birdie bonanza, and it may just be where par is a really good score. He has that major championship mindset right now. And I'm fascinated to see how the whole thing transpires, because he's figured out what just about all and sundry in the professional game are trying to. And that is, what do I have to do in preparation, in play, in recovery and relaxation afterwards to bring out my best? And he's proven time and time again, now five times, that he knows how.
I think Brooks is going to have a good week, Greg, but point out two, we'll split hairs here. He had mentioned he doesn't really like the idea of the blind shot, and there's quite a few of them around this place. I also think of Brooks Koepka as an aggressive putter, kind of just like rams it in the hole, doesn't mind if it goes 5 feet past. I'm a little bit worried about that. I think there's going to be a lot of testy putts. I think things are already going to roll out. I don't want to be the guy who tries to ram in a 5-footer and it catches the lip and now it's 7 feet away, right? Like I almost prefer a guy who's a bit more defensive this week.
You know, it's interesting because we have, you know, when I think of California golf, Southern Cal especially, well, I guess really all of it, I think of Poana greens, but we have bentgrass greens here. And that is very curious. So what does that do to the percentages on short putts? And so is that a concern to me? I think Brooks knows how to figure out whatever he needs to contend and win a major championship. I mean, in his history at the U.S. Open, he's gained strokes in every single event putting that has measured strokes gained putting, every single U.S. Open. So that includes obviously Aaron Hills and Shinnecock, where he won. And it goes to 2019, which was, where was 2019? Pebble Beach. Yep. And then he didn't play at Winged Foot. So 21 was Torrey Pines, and 22 just last year at Brookline. Every single one he's gained strokes putting. I think he's going to figure out the greens. And I feel like he's a very opportunistic putter, and he's very good at those tricky par saves. And I think that lines up really well for him.
I'm going to lump a couple more big boys together here, Patrick. It's Scottie Scheffler and it's John Rahm. If one of them gains strokes putting, they win. That's it. That's all I have to say about these two.
Yeah, I think for Scottie, the tee to green metrics are historic. The bogey rate, sub 10%, like 2000 Tiger Woods at the moment. And there's nothing you can say poorly about tee to green. But personally, I don't love the fact that someone is tinkering with a pretty substantial club, the putter, on Monday, looking at new models, new weights, whatever it may be. And I understand it's warranted. He's been dreadful on the greens. If he putts normal, he wins at Colonial. If he putts normal, he boat races the field at Jack's Place. But like Greg said, when it comes to Scottie Scheffler, do you have faith in him on the back nine on Sunday to make a slippery 10-footer for par, to keep the momentum rolling, to kind of fend off someone? We saw Brooks Koepka do it at Oak Hill on that par five on the back nine when Hovland punched him in the face with a birdie. He dripped that slippery par putt over the edge. And that's really the big question mark for Scottie Scheffler this week. And I don't know the answer, and I don't think he knows the answer either.
Good call. That really is a good call. And I think back to a recent podcast we had where you pitched the question, Rick. All right, are we concerned about Scheffler? And I was like, a little, because, you know, he looks more and more, and he's actually acknowledging it now. He's speaking it, where he's like, the hole's looking smaller and smaller. And then Kyle said, I'm not worried about him because he's going to out-hit his putter. You win U.S. Opens. A U.S. Open largely is a game of recovery. And so you're gonna be faced with 4 and 5 foot putts all day long. The same thing happens at Augusta National, because you can hit a good putt at Augusta National with the fast greens, where you have 4 feet coming back. So you're gonna face your share of that. And to the putter adjustment, you know, he was Scotty, the Scottie Scheffler I know, because to this day he still uses a 5 iron in warm up with a formed grip on it every day. Even in tournaments, he pulls out this thing and hits balls with his club that has basically a ribbed grip to show you where your hand should go. He's done this since the year dot. And he's loath to change. And he sort of does the same thing all the time. And he has a guy now on the greens that has got multiple putters out there, not just a backup. And they're different designs, different head weights. And so this is a guy now that's clearly searching. And then I'm watching, too, how he's kind of grinding out there. I did watch some of the coverage this morning with what looked like a path plate and then a start line little goodie where you putt through the gates. And so he's grinding on the stroke shape and the start lines. Now, look, is it possible to win doing this? Yes, because I was involved with one Monday at the Masters. My brother was like, I'm never going to play this golf course well in 08 because he was putting so poorly. We made one fine adjustment. He won later that week. So is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? Not so much. So I'm really keen to see. Look, the ball striking is otherworldly. I've talked about this. But you cannot out-hit this stuff when it's coming down the stretch, because you're going to have to make one of those putts. You're going to have to. I don't care who you are. You don't have tap-ins all day long when it comes to winning major championships on a Sunday afternoon.
Scottie Scheffler out on Thursday morning with the California boys, Greg, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. We can go with Scheffler, or we can go with John Rahm, also a morning tea time with Xander Schauffele and Victor Hovland. The storyline for Scottie is the putter. For Rahm, it is also the putter, but it is his dominance in California, winning 20% of his tour starts in the Golden State.
It really is dominant. And I'll say lastly on Scottie, we know that the putter's been an issue. So to see him tinkering, it doesn't bother me. But the reason is, well, how much worse can it get? You know, I'm kind of in the same place with him. You know, if he finds something that works, he's going to win. We're in the same place.
If he stinks with the putter, like, okay, cool. He continues to stink.
Right.
True. So if I die situation.
Yes, exactly. So I don't worry about that. But that being said, John Rahm is, I wouldn't say it's a similar situation. He putted poorly at the Memorial, but he's having a much better year with the flat stick. And in fact, if you're going long term, I think he's not number one in the world, because he's leaned on his putter a little more than Scottie Scheffler has. which is it's a great thing. It leads to wins. That's why he has four wins and Scotty has two. But he hasn't been as consistent because he's leaned on the putter a little bit more. I look at John Rahm with his putting prowess. I think his putting's really quite good. And I think it makes him, it separates him, it elevates him above Scottie Scheffler as the most well-rounded player on the PGA Tour. And when you look at a golf course like this, where there's a lot of unknowns out there, there will be a lot of adversity the players will face. They're going to face unique setups and unique winds that they haven't seen before leading into it. And I mean, I think there are three players who I have full confidence in that they're able to adapt and adjust to any of the circumstances. And we've talked about all three of them now. It's Brooks, it's Scheffler, and it's Rahm. And there's a question about Scheffler with the putter. I don't have a question with Scottie Scheffler at all. So, or I don't have a question with John Rahm at all. There is the question with Scottie and the putter. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Rahm this week.
Okay, well, we're going to continue to talk. We can talk about Rahm, but we got to talk about some more big names in this field trying to get it done for a major championship. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're back. Rory McIlroy, Patrick, is, as I mentioned, went around this place on Tuesday morning by himself. First guy out off the first tee. There was like six people following him. It was great. And I'll read his last four U.S. Open finishes. T9, T8, T7, T5. So what are we getting, like a T4, T3 this week?
Oh, man, the back door might be wide open for Rory McIlroy to step through, get top 10, number 19 since 2014. but I kind of like how he's going about this week. I loved that he canceled his media session, block out the noise. He doesn't need to, you know, hear from us idiots in the media. Go about your business, like you said, by himself, just him and Harry and a few other stragglers on the golf course today.
Just Rory, Harry, and Rick out there this morning. That's all. That's all he needs.
The best of boys, close friends and family only, a very intimate ceremony there at LACC. And I think for him, it'll be kind of – I know we talked about his wedge play. It did improve a little bit at the Canadian Open based on what PJ Splits 101 posted in the strokes gain metric. It sounds like you're going to have a lot of difficult golf holes and a lot of, you know, easy scoring chances. And it's the way he's still got the big miss going, I think, off the tee. And that's what I'm kind of concerned about when it comes to Rory McIlroy. But it's been a very low energy season, and he comes in with three top 10 finishes. He held the 54 hole lead at Memorial. He said in Canada, he kind of wished he didn't make that final putt on Saturday to get into the final group. So he would have gotten, you know, bumped up a couple hours in the tee times and gotten kind of softer conditions out there. But he's becoming increasingly more difficult to figure out just because, you know, 1 week he comes in with energy, like in the major championships last year, and has all these great results, but he's coming in with, you know, no energy, none of that Rory bounce, you know, he's not bobbing his head or anything, but he's still finishing. So I really have no idea what to think of Rory McIlroy this week.
No presser, Mark. All golf this week.
He's Rory McIlroy, for Pete's sake. Okay. Yes, what I saw last week. Well, maybe it was Saturday evening. We were having dinner downstairs, myself and some of my colleagues, and Rory was in the same restaurant in the hotel. And he, you know, was buoyant. speaking about how excited he was to come and see this golf course. And Rick, the fact that he was out early with you this morning at six, whatever it was, speaks to that. So it wasn't just lip service. I've seen a guy, because I wasn't with him last week in Canada, but he was close enough so I could watch some golf. And he looks like the golf swing is freeing up a little bit more. He doesn't look like he's afraid of that hook as much. And then he hits that underneath block off the tee that he is. And I've always said that Rory is kind of an elegant Phil Mickelson in the way he plays. Maybe he doesn't have the Mickelson short game skill, but he always just pulls out driver and he's just like all guns blazing kind of thing, where both Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, multiple major champions, you know, won the Grand Slam. They were very cerebral in their approach. And then I've watched Rory over the last couple of weeks adopt some of that. Now, the driver's always been his calling card, but he's okay now mentally to go, you know, if I hit 2-iron or 5-wood or something in the fairway, I'm going to give myself more chances, which I've watched him doing. And then just a final point, I think the addition of an extra wedge to the bag this week is a really good move, because it gives him some options, because some of that wedge play that everyone on Twitter who's not seen the guy play, they're just watching freaking computers and the TV that they're complaining about. It's because he's trying to stretch wedges at times and he's in between numbers. And not everything is binary where it's like, okay, I've got a wedge in hand and I've got the perfect yardage like I do when I'm on the range. You know, on the golf course, you've got uneven lies, crosswinds, you know, got a figure of bounce and stuff. And too often I thought he was trying to hit wedges too far. So I feel like an extra wedge in the repertoire is really going to unlock him a little bit. And I hope he continues to go with some of that, like, I'm just going to put the ball in play off the tee thing. Because last week when I last checked, he was pretty well up there in the strokes gained approach shot metric. And if you had a number of greens in regulation at this place, you're going to be just dandy come Sunday afternoon.
Greg, this is starting to lose track. 8.5 years, I think we're up to on the major championship drought for Rory McIlroy. It's probably been longer than that since he hasn't done a presser at a major championship. He has tried everything, playing his way into a major, not playing his way in, taking it very seriously and saying, I'm going to live or die with this major, or saying, it doesn't really matter at all. We have tried a lot of different mindsets. Now we are going with only golf. Maybe this is the one that gets it done.
It's a worrisome thing to me, because when you look at it in contrast with Brooks Koepka, who pretty much comes in with the same attitude, the same system, every single major championship, it's a very different approach. And Rory doesn't know what his approach is for these majors. Now, maybe we're looking far too into it, because like Mark says, he's Rory McIlroy. You know, he finishes inside the top 10 with his C game. And that's what these last 3 weeks, coming in on 3 top 10s, it doesn't feel like we've seen good Rory. And so, you know, where do you sit with that? He's been playing through the improvements, little alterations to his golf swing. And if you start to see Rory trust it this week, could this be the week that he trusts it? Yeah, I think that's a real possibility. I like that it's his third week in a row. It feels like, as for the media thing, I don't know if I would consider the no press conference strategy maybe this will work for a major. I don't think that's the motive. I think this is very much related with LIV Golf and that whole situation. And Rory knows that he would set the state stage for the entire week for every other press conference, because he was he was on Monday. He was one of the first press conferences scheduled. So I think this is a new chapter in that world, and he's closed the door on it. And now it's Rory, Harry, Rick, and the golf course. And I don't know. My instinct is that's pretty good for him.
Greg, I feel where you're going, and I agree. And I just want to sort of throw it back to last week, where at the Canadian Open, the news drops and then Rory's in the press room, I think the day thereafter. And so they ask him about how you feel about it. And he started to give his take and stuff that he'd heard from Jimmy Dunn. And he said, but to be truthful, what I don't miss, or what I didn't want, is this stuff. To come to Canada and have to start to answer all these questions again. So I'm not at all surprised that at this event, he just said, no, I'll talk to you guys after the first round. And he's still going to get live questions then. I did find it somewhat ironic that the USGA, because they always sort of put groups together, they'll have a funny group and a fat group and a, you know, whoever. Yeah, they if you look, there's always a theme to their groupings, that they put the alpha guy off the PGA Tour and the alpha off the live tour together with a Deki Matsuyama, kind of like Switzerland in between the two of them. They're in rounds two, one and two. So,
or a guy who turned down the money. Right, yeah. Maybe yeah. Switzerland. Exactly. I don't know.
They're pulling from each side.
So I think the move was good, and I think getting singular about it and kind of trying to avoid all the questions and really just focus on what he's got to do is probably the best way to go.
And look, to clarify, I don't know what to expect from Rory McIlroy this week. Like you guys said, he's Rory McIlroy. I expect him to, you know, if he has a bad week, top 20; good week, top 10. But whether it's fair or not, at this stage in his career and given his place in the game, 23-time PGA Tour winner, he's judged on major wins. And so from that respect,
is he judged on the eye test? No eye test for him?
Oh, Rory's – I mean, come on. That swing? Are you kidding me?
He always passes the eye test.
Yeah, it's so sexy watching him play golf, except for like one hole. Hey, one more thing just occurred to me. Like, I think you said this, Patrick, and when you spoke again, it highlighted it to me. Rory's sort of searching for Rory, but he doesn't have the luxury of just playing free with no concern for anyone, because the burden, if you will, of expectation on Rory, I think, is greater than it is on Brooks Koepka. And lo and behold, here's the two of them. Brooks has five now. He's got more majors than Rory, but the fans expect less of him. They're like, oh, it's Brooks. But the fans expect so much of Rory, and he feels that, and you get those Rory vibes. I mean, last week, I was out there Sunday, and it was a circus, and it was electric, and I will never forget it. And you get Nick Taylor serenaded on every shot he hits, but Rory McIlroy was the same thing in Canada. So fans around the globe, he's front and center. So I think he carries this burden too. So perhaps now withdrawing from the thing and just showing up kind of Tiger-esque in a way, just to play, then go and play and go and not be in the media the whole time, I think is not a bad move.
I've got the T-sheet here. I was just trying to find the fat group. I don't see it off the top. Back from that. Here's what we're going to do, gents. We've got some work to do on best bets and one and done, but we had a lot more guys on the outline to talk about. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go around and we can just talk about anybody you want. So some of the guys that we had been considering here in the outline, Greg, start with you. Xander trying to go get his first. Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, fresh off victory, trying to get their first. Will the LA guys figure it out? Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. So this is you. You pick the path, Greg. Choose your own adventure.
Well, I don't think it would be a First Cut podcast without mentioning the name Jordan Spieth. And so he's my choice. I'm very curious. And I would say rather confident that Jordan's going to have a really good week here. It makes so much sense to me. Now, I love what Jordan's done tee to green with the ball striking, the driver especially. I mean, he was second in driving accuracy at the Memorial. Jordan Spieth, right? There's something coming together here. The wrist, I feel like, has to be in a better position now. His iron play this year has been phenomenal. It's 11 of 12 events that he's gained strokes approaching the green. Yet with Jordan, it never feels like we get a venue in a major other than, well, in PGAs and US Opens. I'll clarify, because the Open always looks great for Jordan and the Masters always looks great for Jordan. So PGAs and US Opens, it always feels to me like it's just not a Jordan place. But this one with the width and the space and the opportunity for creativity and his short game, it seems like a match made in heaven.
Well, there you heard it. Jordan Spieth, your 2023 US Open champion, according to Greg Ducharme. I don't mind it. I don't mind it one bit. Patrick, the floor is yours. Where are we headed here?
I'm going to go with the LA boys. La, Colin Morikawa and Max Homa. Max Homa, known for his his play in California, 4 out of his 6 wins, including two this season. Played well at the Genesis as well. And Colin Morikawa coming off the back spasms. He is crouching down to tee, but by all counts, he's 100% healthy.
Oh, okay. I saw him do that, and I was like,
Yeah.
What is he doing? I was like, is the ground that firm that he is?
He's earning pip money.
I saw him do that and I was like, that is so bizarre. Okay, that's to protect the back.
But I mean, both of them are going to have to overcome. I mean, Colin hasn't won since the 21 Open. It's been a while for him now. He looked great at Memorial. Mark, you said you kind of liked what you saw from him over the weekend at Colonial. And I mean, a US Open is, I think, statistically, should be Colin Morikawa's major championship. You pepper fairways and you hit a lot of greens and you two putt and you pick off the occasional birdie. You don't make big numbers. To me, that is Colin Morikawa to a T, and you get him in LA 4-0 at the Walker Cup. People have brought it up, you know, ad nauseum. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have Max Homa, who's mightily struggled on the big stage. He's the only player inside the top 10 in the world without a top 10 finish in a major championship. Like I said on Sunday show, 43 straight major champions have had a top 10 finish before they won. And I would love to see Homa just get in the mix. That is all I'm asking. You know, get the blood flowing a little bit. He comes in with, you know, some decent form after kind of an up and down spring. Played what, Quail and Colonial. I like that he kind of, unlike Rory, he kind of took some time off. His sister got married. And hopefully the good vibes, the positive vibes, as he would say, and all the home fans. I know there's going to be a lot of pressure on his shoulders, but I hope he can handle it.
Okay, Rick. The field is your oyster, Mark.
Yeah, I have a charge for you to go out and find Wilco Nienaber and watch him hit a driver or two.
I saw him on the range. He hit it. He hit it out of the range.
Yeah, and not even breaking a sweat.
Sick.
Then go call up Bryson, whoever, and say, dude, come swing as hard as you can and see if you can keep up with this boy, because he can't. And then, look, I think this is going to be sort of a blue chipper's place, because it asks you all of the questions. You got to be managerial. You got to hit the right shots. You got to control distance with the irons. You got to have the complete game, and you have to be mentally pretty acute. And there's two names that are really sort of standing out to me. And the one, Rick, is your boy, Victor Hovland. I worked so hard to be disciplined and not use him in one and done this week. I honestly did. And the other one is Xander Schauffele. I feel like this dude is a major champion in waiting. He's playing in California. The game is trending right now. Get this. I mean, it's sick. He's played 6 US Opens. He's never missed a cut. His worst finish has been 14th. He's finished inside the top 10 5 times. Now he's at home on a place where it loves a drawing driver. And that is right up his alley. So I feel like the one California boy and the Norwegian, keep tabs on those two this week.
Yeah, I think we might be getting a first-time major winner this week. Give me, just led by Cantlay, Xander, Victor. I think it's coming. Spoke with Victor and Shay Knight just about an hour ago. Obviously, confidence is very high coming off the Memorial win. Obviously, they're feeling good about the game. They like the way this place might set up for them. So things good in Camp Hovland. Gents, we are going to go through our best bets. We're going to release the one and done selections. But first, we are going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You've never joined us before. Producer Josh gives us $100 to go over to Caesars, and we put 50 on a matchup of our choice, 30 on any finishing position that we want, and 10 each on two separate outrights. Josh, release the board, please. And Patrick, why don't you lead us off with your matchup?
Yeah, I know. I just said I'm rooting for him this week, but I'm picking on Homa, and I see I'm not alone. So that's always good. And the The other guy who will be inflicting the pain will be Cam Smith at even money. This guy's quietly riding five straight top 11 finishes between his T9 at the PGA Championship and on LIV Golf. And there's been a lot of Australian sand belt thrown out this week when it comes to describing LACC. You think about Riviera as well. I know Homa's played well there, but so has Cam Smith, and George Thomas designed that one. Some Augusta National with some uneven lies, wide fairways. Cam Smith played pretty well there too. So I like him. He's someone who, if he gets a little hairy off the tee, he has the short game and the putter to back it up.
Greg, you found the same exact matchup for this week.
Yes. I'm thinking with Cam Smith here, I'm thinking Kapalua. That was a part of Patrick's, well, I forget the analogy he used, but you got a little Kapalua. He's won there. You have the Open Championship. It's wide. There's space. Great success at Augusta National as well. I think it's all kind of coming together for a player like Cam Smith. And when you add what he can do on the greens, he can really separate himself on the greens, but also with iron play. And those two areas could give him a real big advantage. I think this golf course is going to ask for his strengths this week. So I'm looking forward to seeing Cam Smith. And I mean, I hope he proves me wrong. I don't trust Max Homa at this point in majors. Even here, even though he has the course record here, I got to see a little bit more. And I think Cam Smith being the dog in this is, a little unfair. So I think that played into my decision as well.
Put some respect on that name. I'm saying, Greg.
Speaking of dogs, I took a bulldog. Russell Henley -130 over Sahith. Mark, what is your matchup for the week?
I'm going with a boy who, I'm going to make some Canadian enemies. Should have won last week in Canada in Tommy Fleetwood. He's carrying a mini driver. It's kind of a beefed up two wood that he hits like laser straight. And he drops it down on the ground, hits it flat and far too. It's like 280, 290. The ball's going to roll out. He's going to play from the fairway a bunch. And it just looks like Butch Harmon has really helped him into some self-belief, because I was with his group early last week in Canada, and he got off to a fast start, 200 through two. And I'm like, here we go. And then all of a sudden, he started to do sort of Tommy stuff where just – it didn't look convincing to me. And then all of a sudden he's in there with a putt to win a few times. So I feel like he's playing with a lot of confidence. I feel like he takes down a big tone this week in the US Open.
All right. $30 on the finishing position. I'll just fast forward us here. Xander top 10 for me, that's +165. Patrick went with Ricky Fowler +190 to finish inside the top 20. Mark went with Harris English top 40 +140. And Greg went with Justin Rose to finish inside the top 20 at +150. Greg, why don't you give us both of your outrights, and both of them are the same odds, 25-1.
Yes, I've spoken about both of them already, so we can make this quick. Jordan Spieth and Cam Smith. I think the creativity is going to be a big factor here. I think that iron play and short game are going to be a huge factor. These guys have it in spades. Jordan Spieth and Cam Smith. Sign me up.
We've got some overlap here. I went with Jordan Spieth at 25-1. That's one of Patrick's. I went with Xander Schauffele at 18-1. That's one of Mark. So, Mark, you went with Xander, and who else for this week?
I went with Xander and Fleetwood. Although, it's hard not to consider Matt Fitzpatrick. He's playing great, defending champion. It's hard not to consider Scotty and Rahm and Brooks and Rory and those guys. But I just went with Fleetwood for the number. I think +4,000, 40-1 is a good bet. And I got a sense about Xander Schauffele. I really do.
I walked a handful of holes with Matt Fitzpatrick this morning, and it was the most efficient data collection practice round I have ever. I want to be best friends with Matt Fitzpatrick is what I want. It was so cool to watch them just get all the intel as quickly as possible. Patrick, I already spoiled one of your picks for this week. It's Jordan Spieth. The other one is by far the longest one we have on the board.
Look, legends are made in the Hollywood Hills, in the city of Los Angeles, the city of angels. Blind resume. This guy, 7th in total strokes gained last 3 months, 5th in driving accuracy, 6 top 20 finishes in his last 7 events, including 3 in Desi's, a top 5 at the Masters, the 18, 36, 54-hole leader at the 2021 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. It is 150-1. The Georgia Bulldog, get on the Rust bus, Russell Henley.
Let me
I love it.
Put your mind at ease here. You've given all the data. His mom and dad have both been very, very sick. And that's really, but he's battled with that. He's had to withdraw a few times from events, but catching up with him, he says he feels good, good to go. Was up there in North Carolina practicing a little bit. That's a smart bet by you there.
Okay.
150-1. Russell Henley, best bets, $50 on anything that we want. Again, I'll run us through here these quite quickly so we can do the one and done stuff. Denny McCarthy, top 30 for me, plus 150 has been great. Patrick says, no thanks, Max Homa. He's going to miss the cut, plus 225. Mark, giving a nod to the seniors. Patty Harrington, top senior, plus 175.
There are three of them in the field, Stuart Sink, Phil Mickelson, and Padraig. They're all young at heart. But I just feel like Padraig he's got that childish way about him, and he's playing great. And I feel like he can easily pip both Phil and Sink this week.
And Greg actually finds a wager that Mark had earlier as well. Harris English top 40 at plus 140. So good synergies there. All right. Time for the one and done, the moment we've all been waiting for. I don't know if we have the final purse yet, but it'll be 3 point something to the winner. Patrick, we teased this earlier in the week. It has come to fruition. You and I are going to battle together with who?
I almost went full Trojan horse Yasser on you, Rick, and kind of, but we're going with John Uthin Rahm, the 2023 U.S. Open winner, five wins and 25 starts in California. It'll
but he's
bump
not
me up.
He's not on your bet your betting sheet.
No, because I'm using him here. You got to diversify, man. You can't be in. Look, John Rahm's a large cap. They're crushing this time of year. I got a lot of small caps on the betting card, which, you know, a growth opportunity there, like 150-1 long shot. But John Rahm, your 2023 U.S. Open champion. He said today, someone asked him what it would feel like to be the first Spanish golfer to win the U.S. Open twice. The guy didn't realize John Rahm is the only Spanish golfer to win the U.S. Open. And so he was like, I mean, yeah, it'd be great, I guess.
And to win it three times and four times or whatever else he has to do. John Rahm for myself and Patrick. Vamos, John Rahm.
Vamos.
I believe, in route right now, is lone wolfing it with Brooks Koepka. Greg, you, Sia Nijad, and the fans have all found the same golfer this week. Who is it, please?
It is Cameron Smith, who is on my bet card, all over my bet card. Look, this is the time when you use the live players because you're going to be a little limited. And when you're running out,
Mark has all the info
he needs. He's going to leave guys off the table. I'm not at this point, given my position on the board. So I like Cam Smith here anyway, but given it's a major, there's only two left. I'm gonna use him here.
Sneaky little Kyle M is lone wolfing it with Colin Morikawa. And Mark, you are in the lead by yourself going to the first tee on Thursday with who?
Xander. But I will be honest. I wrestled with myself on this decision. I was so into choosing Brooks because of the very reason that that Greg said with the live guys. I've still got Brooks and Cam Smith available, so maybe open championship time. I thought about Victor Hovland, but I've got an idea for him later on in the season. So I was like, I planned for Xander in the beginning of the year. And I was like, well, just stick to the plan, because the couple times this season I have deviated from what I had planned, things didn't work out so great. Two of them worked into miscuts. So I'm going with a plan. I'm going with Xander.
For those just listening at home, here we go. Mark, 16 million, Xander Schauffele. Kyle M, 14.4, Colin Morikawa. The fans, 13.2. Cam Smith. Rick, 12.8, John Rahm. Sia, 11 million, Cam Smith. Greg, 9.6 million, Cam Smith. Kyle Porter, 8.1, Brooks Koepka. Patrick, 7.8, but only for now, because that number is going to go up by about $3 million. John Rahm for Patrick.
One by one by one, these national opens shall be mine.
Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We will be back round by round Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to break down all the sights and sounds of the North Course at LACC and find ourselves a United States Open champion. Big thanks, producer Josh, does all the hard work behind the scenes. Mark Immelman can be found on Twitter at @Mark_Immelman. Greg Ducharme at @TheRealGFD. Patrick McDonald at @AmateurStatus. And you can find me at @RickRungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.